Imagine being 9 years old and having lived under six different identities across 15 countries. While most children worry about playground politics, young Cheryl Diamond was perfecting the art of disappearing without a trace. Her memoir, Nowhere Girl, reads like a thriller where the protagonist is a child caught in her father's web of deception. By age four in Kashmir, India, she was already living by the family code: stay vigilant, trust no one, and never reveal your real name, which was actually Harbhajan, meaning Song of God, Truth. The irony of living a life built entirely on lies wasn't lost on her, even as a child. Every morning began with her father, Frank, putting her through rigorous physical training, perfect splits, deep back bends, hundreds of sit-ups, because apparently, when you're on the run, gymnastic skills are essential survival gear. The family operated under elaborate rules: memorize your cover story, never share contact information, cash transactions only, and once you leave a place, it's dead to you forever. Between border crossings, they'd visit spiritual sites like the Golden Temple in Amritsar, where young Harbhajan would contemplate her name's meaning while living its antithesis. Isn't it strange how we can recognize truth even while being trained to obscure it? After nearly dying from illness in Delhi, the family recuperated in Sydney, overlooking the Opera House. Life briefly felt normal: gymnastics classes, friends, routines. But their Australian paradise ended when another parent's innocent questions about their past forced them to flee without goodbyes. When she asked her CNN-watching, market-obsessed father about settling down, he replied ominously, "Moving targets are harder to hit." In South Africa, amid anti-apartheid violence, they lived in luxury while her father, oddly, used a fake severed arm prop named Fred to shock locals. Social interactions were treacherous. Vancouver gymnasts convinced her she was going deaf by silently mouthing words. At Sunday school, unfamiliar with Christianity, she answered Interpol when asked about Jesus, earning instant expulsion. How could she develop normal social skills when her life was built on deception? Their Vancouver life ended abruptly when a business associate requested legal papers. That evening became a blur of document destruction and hasty packing. By morning, they executed their relocation protocol, a process they'd perfected through repeated practice. At the airport, her father bypassed normal ticketing procedures. During their Toronto layover, she overheard her mother speaking with her grandfather, a European law enforcement official seeking custody intervention. This revelation shattered her understanding. They weren't fleeing nameless threats, but specific people, including her own family. In Heidelberg, her older brother's violation of personal boundaries left lasting trauma. Their subsequent silent agreement to avoid discussing it typified the family's pattern of burying painful events. These experiences transformed her from an adaptable child into someone who struggled with trust, especially toward those meant to be her protectors. By age 10 in Vienna, she was rehearsing a new identity: Crystal from Key West, Florida. Her father tested her vigilantly, even using made-up words like Bajan to catch slip-ups. Not even Vienna's Christmas magic could lift her spirits as she performed at gymnastics meets, longing for stability. Her father's next scheme involved becoming Jewish and relocating to Israel, motivated purely by his belief that Jewish people controlled global finance. When she questioned the authenticity of their instant conversion, he dismissed her concerns. They'd simply craft another story. Though the family worried about her Nordic features, her mother insisted some Ashkenazi Jews were blonde. In Tel Aviv, Frank planned to compete in the Maccabiah Games while she trained with the Israeli Olympic gymnastics team. Under Coach Zahava, she embraced punishing workouts. Most evenings, she and Frank watched sunsets from their hotel scaffolding, nursing injuries, their peculiar version of family bonding through shared risk and pain. By 13, her family was crumbling. During a rare call, her brother Frank, recently expelled from university, told her, "Our family isn't fixable. It wasn't functioning in the first place." He called her the strong one who maintained her identity despite their constant name changes. her father remained cold when confronted, warning that life is not shopping malls and root beer floats, and that second chances are for failures. He threatened her with foster care or her grandfather, who he claimed was trying to destroy them. After her sister Kiara fled, her father declared they could never return, fearing she might reveal their location. They landed in a North Carolina motel, trading luxury cars for cash. As she drifted between the motel and strip malls, she learned a shocking truth. Frank and Kiara were her half-siblings from her mother's previous marriage, explaining her father's unequal treatment. At 16, Cheryl Diamond joined Prima Models in New York with just $300, leaving her broke parents behind. Living in a cheap New Jersey motel, she commuted to Manhattan for castings amid constant rejection. By 22, her health collapsed. She lost 30 pounds from abdominal pain and internal bleeding. Without insurance, she endured an unanesthetized colonoscopy, leading to a Crohn's disease diagnosis likely triggered by her fugitive lifestyle. The final break with her father came at a Florida beach bar. Seeking reconciliation, he offered a cold ultimatum: abandon her mother, pay him 30% of future earnings, and follow his lead. He dismissed her achievements and predicted failure without him. Though weakened and broke, she refused, her first true act of defiance. Desperate, she approached her grandfather, their supposed enemy, for help. With only a Brazilian passport and $100, she and her mother fled to Luxembourg, leaving her father's birth certificate behind. From her grandparents' attic, she fought for citizenship, despite the prosecutor claiming her whole life has been a lie. Victory came when her mother found her New Zealand birth doctor, who remembered the humming baby who kicked off all her blankets and provided crucial evidence. Victory came when Luxembourg's Superior Court granted her citizenship certificate, making her no longer a ghost. In her grandfather's garden, she reflected on their paradox. Though they disagreed fundamentally, he'd fought for her to have the freedom he'd denied others. From Rome, she contemplated how Crohn's disease had ultimately saved her by forcing her to recognize her wrong path. She cherished her earliest memory, standing in Himalayan mist as her father showed her the world, saying, "That's the earth, Harbhajan, it's yours." She treasured those first 7 years of being cherished. She now knew herself through joy and remembrance, not anger, understanding that beauty and love is something I deserve. Beyond any passport, I am and will forever be Harbhajan. Her journey reveals a profound truth. Our identities aren't found in documents, names, or even our narratives. They live in that quiet place within that recognizes truth amid lies. How many of us face this same challenge, seeking our authentic selves beneath constructed identities?